morning because, as some of you know, the title of my talk this morning is Finding Your Inner Hero. Just because it's in there doesn't mean you can find it necessarily. So that's what we're going to talk about. This past Monday, I treated myself to a movie all by myself. That was fun. I like doing that on occasion. I went to the Midtown Theaters over here, and I saw the new Batman movie, The Dark Knight. Went and saw it. It was a little violent. Well, maybe more than a little violent, I guess, you know. But it had all the basics. It had a really cool superhero, you know, and it had this incredibly cool bad guy. That's worth going to see, just to see Heath Ledger playing the Joker. And it had a beautiful woman, Maggie Gyllenhaal, that the superhero was in love with, but he couldn't have her because he was a superhero and she wanted him to give up his career for her. You know, I hate those kind of stories, all that stuff. And I won't tell you what happened, but it all worked out in the end, in case you want to go see it. As I think back in my life, I had a lot of heroes when I was growing up, just like most of us did. But the names of the heroes kept changing as I went through all of the different stages of my life. I went through most of the typical stages, I think. I went through the comic book heroes, and then the sports heroes, and then the war heroes, that kind of thing. I remember I had this really big Zorro phase when I was 8 years old. You know, that was 1958. I remember when I was 8 years old, my parents brought home a brand new baby brother, and I was really disappointed when they named him Steven instead of Zorro. You know, I was really... Now that he's with the Foreign Service in the Middle East, I bet he's happy he got Steven instead of Zorro, but you know. I mean, I had a cape and a mask for Halloween and that stuff. I had a Zorro lunchbox that would probably go for $1,000 on eBay today. And eventually, I outgrew it, which is good because it probably wouldn't have gone over well when I got to the military college that I went to. But as fate would have it, my senior year at this military university, guess what they gave me? A cape. And a sword, you know, so it all comes, go figure, it all comes full circle. In my generation, which applies to at least a few of you, when we were very young, most of our heroes then were fantasy figures. It was Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman, whoever it was, depending upon the latest comic book that we read, because kids change their mind as quickly as they change the channels on the TV. But the one common characteristic that all of our heroes had was power. They all had power of some kind because children often feel powerless. So if we feel trapped as a child, we choose a hero who can fly. If we feel ugly, we choose a hero who's handsome or beautiful. If we feel weak, we choose a hero who is strong. And identifying with them allows us to experience something that we felt was missing in our life. But as we got older, as we got through our early teens and became, you know, mid-teens in that level, the heroes that we had then began to tell us more and more about ourselves. The heroes that we chose, the pictures we had up on our walls, began to reflect our deeper desires. They began to show us what we were feeling was more important in life. So instead of comic book heroes or Disney characters, we started to look to real people for our inspiration. And that's when it gets a little touchy, because when we are teenagers, we are extremely impressionable. There's no telling what may appeal to us for our heroes. Now, hopefully, the people who attracted our attention and our admiration were people who would help us grow into better human beings. When I was in my late teens, it was Bobby Kennedy and Dr. Martin Luther King. On the other hand, some young people, both then and now, are attracted to role models who are not quite as a part of mainstream society, I guess you could say. I remember when another of my younger brothers went through a phase where he absolutely worshipped Jim Morrison. Remember the lead singer of The Doors? There's an upstanding citizen for you, I'll tell you. And as I recall, my father, who was a military drill instructor in the Navy, was not real happy about him choosing this long-haired, druggy type, you know, individual as his hero. But in retrospect, it made perfect sense, because my brother was choosing a hero who reflected his own desire to break out of the mainstream of society, which is eventually what he ended up doing. So his hero, for better or worse, was a very appropriate choice for him. And whether or not you liked Jim Morrison as a person, he was definitely someone who chose his own path, which is why he appealed to a lot of people in the 60s for just that reason. And the equivalent today might be Britney Spears or some of the rap stars or some of the people who our parents might not approve of. The point I'm making is that heroes are neither good nor bad any more than our reflection in a mirror can be good or bad, because that's what heroes are. They are reflections of something in us. Just like most of the ideas that we talk about in this teaching, our choice of heroes at any given time in our life depends upon the way we think about ourselves in relation to our life, to the world around us. That's what I want to talk about today. Now, as I got thinking about this idea, I began to realize that my own personal definition of a hero is still changing even today. As a matter of fact, if you ask me if I have any living heroes today, I'm not sure that I could give you an answer. There's really no one in the sports world. I don't follow sports. I mean, Michael Phelps has done a pretty good job the last couple weeks, but I wouldn't call him a hero, maybe for someone else, but not for me. There are certainly no politicians I can think of, not in this country anyway. Maybe if we go back a little ways, 10 or 12 years, the guy who stood in front of the tanks in Tiananmen Square, remember that? That was pretty brave. He had guts. Or the firefighters and the police officers and the rescue workers in New York on 9/11, 7 years ago. There are definitely some heroic people around, no doubt about it. But I think most of us look at these kind of heroes sort of in the abstract as society's heroes and not ours. I guess there's some small part of me, maybe you can identify with this, that's connected closely to my ego, no doubt, that's a little bit uncomfortable with the idea of having a personal hero, of having someone that I want to model myself after. Maybe it's because I've reached a point in my life where what people do doesn't impress me as much as the ideas that they have, because ideas are so powerful. Or maybe it's because society no longer believes in heroes, at least not in the same way that we used to. Sometimes I think that we are obsessed with seeing heroes fall. We seem to get some sort of perverse satisfaction when some important figure is caught doing something that they shouldn't be doing, like, can you say John Edwards? You know, when we see things like that. Even if what they were caught doing has nothing to do with their accomplishments or their achievements, which may be very, very wonderful. Even after our heroes die, we see this. Some people feel the need to bring them down. Look at the stories they talk about President John Kennedy or Dr. King, the stories people tell that try to minimize them. I don't know why it surprises us so much that these heroes are actually human beings just like us. On the other hand, just like most people, I still love to watch the news clips every so often, and now we see it on YouTube, of people who are doing things that are noble or courageous with no concern for their own safety. I am excited when I see people doing heroic things. I like to read Reader's Digest on occasion. It's always so positive. They've got some great stories there. And there was an issue a number of years back. I think I saw it in a doctor's office last week. That's kind of how they do it. And the issue was about three ordinary people who performed extraordinary acts of heroism. One of the stories was about a housewife who was driving down a four-lane highway with no median, just a line in the middle, and she stopped and jumped out of her car because she saw a car weaving and it was starting to go across the median. It turns out the driver had had a heart attack, and she raced over and while the car was moving, pulled open the door, jumped in and stopped the car because it was heading into the oncoming lanes of traffic. There was another story about a man who jumped into a huge storm ditch during a flood where it looked like a Maytag washer there to rescue a 63-year-old grandmother who was trapped underwater in her car. He had seen the car go into the water. And the third story, fairly classic, about a man who just went into a raging house fire to rescue an 18-month-old baby that was not his. In all of these cases, all of the people that they rescued survived. They lived to see their grandchildren or to have children of their own, and the rescuer and the people they rescued still keep in touch. That's what's beautiful about the story. So whenever I read about these stories, once I have felt and enjoyed the good feeling that I get about what these people did, there's something inside of me that wonders what I would have done if I were in that situation? You ever think about that when you hear these stories? How would we behave in the same situation? What is it about these people, these specific people, that caused them to risk their own lives? And by the way, in these three cases, all of these people had spouses and children of their own who could have lost, you know, their own loved one. What is it about these people that caused them to go ahead and do something to save people they didn't even know? It was not an intellectual decision. They didn't have time to think about it. It wasn't something they practiced, so it wasn't that they were talented at going into burning houses or anything like that. It had to come from some place deeper. It had to come from something deeper. Ernest Hemingway, who was a war hero and a hero in a number of ways, once made the statement, "As we get older, it is harder to have heroes, but it is still necessary." It's still necessary. And I believe he was right. Because there's something about seeing the nobility of the human spirit in action that raises us all up to a higher level. So maybe it's not that it's harder to have heroes today as we get older. Maybe we just need a different idea of what a hero really is. Now, part of the problem is we seem to throw the word hero around a lot. In fact, most of what society calls heroes today are actually more like superstars or performing artists. We talk about sports heroes. We talk about movie stars as heroes. We talk about music legends and heroes. On the internet, someone can be a hero today in the front page and completely forgotten tomorrow. That's how quickly it changes. Humanity has a long history of putting people up on pedestals for reasons that aren't all that big a deal, of focusing all of its praise and all of its energy and attention on those individuals who have, granted, some unique ability, or people who have actually done something great. But a true hero is something much more than someone with a lot of talent or someone who did something significant. Geniuses like Bach or Beethoven or Einstein or any of those individuals are admired and respected, but we don't think of them as heroes. Because to get the label hero, someone has to do something that is truly above and beyond. If you look in the dictionary, it defines a hero as a person of distinguished courage or ability, admired by others for their brave deeds and noble qualities, one who is regarded as a model or an ideal. And that's pretty impressive. But I actually think that this definition leaves room for some different kinds of heroes than the ones we have been looking at recently. You see, in the eyes of most people, a hero is someone who does something that they could never see themselves doing. But the definition of a heroic act can cover a very broad range of behaviors. It doesn't always have to be a dramatic, flaming rooftop rescue. It also includes those quiet acts of everyday heroism that don't show up in the newspaper. The mother or the father who stays up all night nursing a sick child. The single parent who goes to work every day or who works two or three jobs to support his or her family. The person who quietly but firmly refuses to go along with something that is unethical or unjust. All of these things require great courage and noble abilities. And they are all completely possible for anyone who has the spiritual awareness and the inner strength to accomplish them. In other words, we all qualify. We all qualify. Whether we believe it or not, we are all potential heroes. We just have a little trouble seeing it because most of the time we don't feel very heroic at all. Which is why, from a mental and spiritual viewpoint, it's important for us to understand what we're doing when we assume that being a hero is beyond our capabilities. Many of us believe, on some level, that a person who performs a heroic act is somehow different from the rest of us. We admire what they did. We're certainly glad that they did it, but we don't see any connection between their behavior and ours. We see them as exceptions to the normal human behavior when we should be seeing them as examples, as examples. It's this subtle separation between us and them that not only prevents us from following in their footsteps, it also makes it easier for us to stand by silently when society tries to tear them down. In either case, we all lose. We all lose. Because we are all one, we are all connected at the spiritual level, anything that diminishes one of us diminishes us all. That's why we need to start seeing our heroes not as people who are showing us what they can do, like the sports heroes or the movie stars, but as people who are showing us what we can do. What we can do. Because any truly heroic act is never strictly a matter of some individual making a difficult decision and carrying it out no matter what the consequences. That's not what it's about. It's about a person who has reached a clear, direct, and unwavering decision on a conscious or a subconscious level that they have to do what needs to be done in the moment, no matter what the cost. No matter what the cost. And that could mean going into a burning building to save a child or a dog, maybe. Or it could mean giving years of our life one day at a time to care for a child or a spouse or a partner or a parent who needs us. Both of those things require great courage. And both require an awareness that we are much more powerful and capable than we ever believed we were. The point is, every single one of us has within us the same courage and the same power. The only difference is the hero is the person who has made the decision to use those qualities. To use those qualities. One of the things that we teach here is that we are much more than we appear to be. William James, one of the great psychologists and philosophers of the last century, wrote this. It's a few sentences. Bear with me. He says, first of all, most people live in a very restricted circle of their potential being. Most people live in a very restricted circle of their potential being. They make use of a very small portion of their possible consciousness and of their soul's resources in general, much like a man with a healthy body who uses only his little finger. And then he says, great emergencies and crises show us how much greater our vital resources are than we had supposed. It's too bad that we have to wait for some great emergency before we allow the power of life to flow through us unobstructed. Unobstructed. You know, life is composed of infinite possibilities. That's what makes it so exciting and so interesting. And the people who get the most out of it are always going to be those who move forward selflessly with courage and a complete faith in the presence of a power that supports them completely. Now, they may not be perfect. In fact, heroes are never, almost never perfect. That's what I liked about the Batman movie. He made mistakes. He screwed things up, you know? He wasn't sure of himself. That's okay. Sometimes looking for perfection is just an excuse not to take any chances. You ever notice that? We are spiritual beings, learning to grow in a physical world by using our human bodies and a divine intelligence coupled with the power to choose and the power to act. That's what we are. That's quite a combination. We are spiritual beings learning to grow in a physical world by using human bodies and divine intelligence coupled with the power to choose and the power to act. To act. We are not meant to sit around being cautious and careful, waiting for whatever crumbs of life might happen to fall our way. That's not what we're here for. The truth is, there are always going to be things in life that we are afraid to do or that we don't want to do. So what? That's life. We may need to do them anyway. In fact, maybe what we ought to start doing is practice doing things on a regular basis that we are afraid to do so we know what it feels like. That way, if something unexpected happens that requires us to do something that we've never done before, we will be mentally, emotionally, and spiritually prepared. We'll know how to think without our brain going numb. We'll know how to act even if our knees are shaking. I believe that's part of the reason that people climb mountains and ride motorcycles and jump out of airplanes. It's not to impress other people. It is to impress upon themselves that they can do things they never thought they could do. You see, doing great things is not about physical heroism as much as it is about mental and spiritual heroism. That's why Mother Teresa once said that we don't need to do great things as much as we need to do small things with great love. Small things with great love. That's the kind of hero who makes a real, lasting difference in the world. Finally, seeing ourselves in others is what helps us to grow. Because when anyone around us steps outside of their comfort zone, they are also showing us greater things that we can do. The greatest heroes in our life are always the most perfect mirrors. The best teachers reflect our ability to teach. The best healers reflect our ability to heal. The best lovers reflect our ability to love. And as we honor them for what they have done, and thank them for what they have taught us by their example, we also honor ourselves. We also honor ourselves. We honor our ability to learn and to grow. We also honor the strength in us that comes alive as it recognizes the same strength in them. And if we make the conscious decision to live our life this way, taking into ourselves only the best of whatever we see around us, we're going to discover something truly, truly wonderful. We will discover that deep inside of us, in our heart, in our soul, and in our mind, is the hero that we have always been looking for. And not only is it faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, what's the next one? And able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, it can also heal and prosper and love. It can succeed at anything it decides to do. It can attract whatever it desires, and it can create whatever it chooses to create. In fact, the hero in us can do anything that it sets its mind to do, and nothing can stand in its way. That's the kind of hero we need to allow ourselves to be. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, let's take a few deep breaths, relax for a moment. Take the words that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. Let us recognize that life is wide open before us. The obstacles that we see are not in life, they are in our mind and our heart. And that is where we need to remove them. And these obstacles are not so large that they need super strength to push them out of the way. As we see them for what they are, false ideas with no power, they dissolve. We fly above them, we quickly move around them, and before we know it, they are behind us. And when they are behind us, instead of watching them as they recede into the past, we turn forward and let them go. We recognize that we have the ability to soar, that we have strength in our mind and our heart that can overcome anything, that we have the power to love, which is the greatest power that anyone could ever have. And as we give that love freely to every person everywhere, as we give of ourselves without measure, unconditionally, without fear of anything being taken from us, without fear of anything taking our strength or taking our money or taking our creativity or our ideas, recognizing that there is an infinite amount of abundance, ideas, and power in the world, and it comes through each and every one of us. So that infinite power is present in me, it's present in you, and as we use it together to create the world around us, we create a world that supports everyone. A world that allows freedom and justice, not to mention food, clothing, shelter, and peace to every person everywhere. We have the ability to bring this to the world. So I invite you now, in the silence of your own heart and mind, to take a few moments, and in these few moments, see yourself in the center of your mind's eye. See yourself as shining, beautiful, powerful. You can even put an S on your chest if you want. See yourself as the powerful being that you are. Acknowledge it and accept the presence of Spirit in you. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We embrace it. We honor it. We see this truth in every other person. The Spirit in us recognizes the Spirit in them. And knowing this, we release into consciousness this greater awareness and allow it to create a life that is greater than we ever imagined. We accept this truth and we release it into consciousness, knowing that it is our truth from this moment on, and so it is.